You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
What they want. Today, Pat and Heidi and Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
The weather this afternoon is going to be partly sunny with a high near 90. Tonight will be patchy fog and otherwise partly cloudy with a low around 64. There's west winds around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Tuesday will be sunny with a high near 92. And Tuesday night will be mostly clear with a low around 67. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 91. And it'll be light variable winds. And Wednesday night will be partly cloudy with a low around 67. And welcome to Hunterdon Medical Center's Hour. Compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. And we are very privileged today, and I know I'm going to murder your name, Jean Gemelli.
That's right.
Oh, I got it right. All right. Probably won't get it right the next time, but this time I got it right. Who's the Director of Parenting and Childbirth Education at the Hunterdon Medical Center.
Right.
Is that correct? Okay. What is your role there? What do you do? I mean, all right, you're in charge, but what right. in charge of?
What, right.
What?
Right. You know? Actually, the newer title is Director of Perinatal Education as well as Childbirth Education. So the perinatal part is educating the maternity nurses, updating them on what they need to know, so planning educational programs so that they practice the latest evidence-based nursing practice. The childbirth ed piece I've had for a very, very long time. And under that comes all of the prenatal and postpartum classes for parents. The lactation program is also mine, as well as the car seat program. So it's a lot of stuff to do.
You know, I see when I volunteer on Friday, I see a lot of times that they'll have the car seat. You know, people go out with the car seat, or you know, lady will go out and do the car seat.
Well, that would be me.
Yeah, I know.
I'm the only technician right now. So we actually started that program 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think we were probably the first in New Jersey to start, as a hospital, to start offering that. So it's a very nice thing to do. It's a free service that we offer.
Right.
Most people do get their car seats wrong.
Right.
So it's nice to make
A lot of times they do.
They do.
I'm sure.
Right.
You know.
Right. It's not complicated, but I tell the dads it's like me changing oil. I have a rough idea of where it is, but I have no idea what I'm doing under the hood. So.
And you know, it's, I won't tell you, well, let's just say we have four children. My youngest is 38.
Okay.
So, but it's my oldest, well over 40. And, you know, it was like car seats. You just, you know, you put them in the back.
And that was all you did.
I can't tell you how many times you'd see pickup trucks with kids in the back hanging out, waving at you, you know, and stuff. And, you know, I'm not saying it wasn't dangerous now looking back.
Right.
But at the time.
Well, we didn't know any
It was
better.
Accepted.
Right.
Know, and it wasn't. You know, wasn't even seatbelts because
we didn't have
seatbelts.
Nobody was protected in the vehicle.
You know, it's like, you know, you sat in the car and you put the kid in the back or you put him in the front seat.
Right.
You know, Right. Because you had bench seats then. You didn't have bucket seats.
That's right.
And so you may get this, put the kid in the middle or something, you know, if he was the only one.
Right. And you held your hand out if you hit the brake.
Or your arm across them, you know.
That's what you did, right.
And, you know.
So what we had years ago was only a few radio stations or only a few TV stations. So we didn't hear about all the fatalities that children suffered. Because if there were no fatalities, we wouldn't have car seats today.
Right.
Because we
right.
know that kids are safe. So when grandfathers come into me and say, well, we didn't have this, why do we have this now? It's because kids didn't make it.
Sure.
They slammed against dashboards and they were crushed between their parents and all kinds of awful
right.
things. So now right. we keep kids safer. And the car seats actually prevent injury 71% of the time. I mean, so we've saved a lot of kids. One of the most gratifying things I get is a phone call from a mom who says, you helped me with my car seat. And we just had an accident, totaled the car. My baby's okay.
Yeah.
So that's why I do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
change,
people ask me why we're very involved with NAMI. My youngest son has schizophrenia.
Uh-huh.
And he volunteers at the hospital. He used to do 4 days a week. Now he works a part-time job, so he only does it one day on Mondays. But you know, people ask me why I do this and why I do the radio and why I do teach classes at NAMI and run support groups and stuff. And I say, well, if I can help one person, one family.
Exactly.
Then it's worth it.
Right.
Then
That's
it's
exactly
worthwhile.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when we had the problem going back, nobody knew what NAMI was. We didn't know what
right.
to do.
Right.
You know, they hospitalized my son and he spent the next almost 2 3/4 years hospitalized.
Oh, my goodness.
Between Trenton Psych and Hagedorn.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know where to turn. We didn't know that there was a place or people that you could go to for help. And,
right.
You know, I just, you know, you muddled through on your own until
right.
Finally Chris Maglione's predecessor, I forget her name now, but she's since retired. Mm-hmm. And she told us about, she ran like a support group and, and told us about NAMI, and that's how we got involved in it. You know,
nice.
But we didn't know. You know.
Yeah, you just don't know.
I mean, people don't advertise it on the radio.
Right.
You know, I mean, I do now. You know, because of
right.
my show. But
right.
you know, but it, you know, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you get involved in all this? Going back,
I've been doing it a very, very long time. I've always had a passion for teaching. I've worked in med-surg nursing and intensive care and public health and office nursing. But always liked teaching. So when
you're an RN,
Yep. Mm-hmm. So when this position opened up years ago, and it was a part-time position, I was offered it. So I took it and I built the program. The program started out sort of in its infancy and I built it along. And that's thanks to the medical center and their progressive ideas about, when I had an idea, my supervisor would say, well, let's give it a try. Sometimes it flew, sometimes it didn't, but that's how we built the program. And when I first began it, we only had a few classes, and now we've got many more than that, which was really nice. But teaching is a passion of mine, and giving to new parents and helping them assume their roles and become confident in their roles as parents, that's very gratifying to
sure.
me. So.
Sure, I would
imagine.
And
then mentoring my staff as well is a nice thing to be able to do.
You know, you had mentioned earlier a few minutes ago about educating nurses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a person becomes a nurse,
right,
male or female, it doesn't matter, and they're a nurse and they're an RN, I would imagine that they have to get trained in any area that they wind up in. If they're in ER, if they're surgery, I'll get it out. you know, they would have to get trained.
That's right.
So I would think with childbirth and aftercare and so on and so forth, that they would get have to be trained.
The nurses or the parents?
Both.
Yeah.
At this day and age.
Absolutely. You know, nursing school is, it's become so complex. The knowledge base is so huge now. You can't teach a nurse everything she needs to know for every specialty because every specialty is very, very narrow now.
Sure.
So they come out of school knowing the basics, knowing how to do what's called thinking critically. I have a situation. What am I going to do? Why am I going to do that first? What am I going to do next? Why am I going to do that next? What are the alternatives? So it's teaching nurses how to think, and then they have an extensive orientation wherever they go,
right,
that orients them to the specialty area that they're in.
Sure.
So when I graduated from nursing school, within a month, I was a charge nurse on the evenings. That's a little scary looking back.
Yeah.
But that was many years ago when the base of knowledge wasn't quite as much as it is now.
Right.
So
right.
So they sort of come out knowing the basics, and then we have to mold them and teach them what they need to know.
Right.
And everything now is based on evidence. We used to do things because of tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've always done it that way. We've always cleaned an umbilical cord that way.
Right.
Well, it turns out the way we did it really wasn't the right way to do it. It works better if you just don't do anything at all to it now. And that's based on current evidence.
Right.
We didn't have that evidence years ago. We do have it now. So nurses don't do anything without solidly being based on evidence. We don't do it based on tradition anymore, because what you thought worked maybe doesn't really work. So,
or it only may work sometimes.
That's right. So now we have the science behind it. It makes it much more complex for nurses to keep up with it. But that's the way to do business. You mm-hmm. don't do something if it doesn't work.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
So.
All right, a couple finds out they're having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do?
Well, I would
hope. What's the first step they
What's
do?
The first step? Well, the first step is to back up about 3 months before they find out that they're pregnant. They really, if anybody is planning on becoming pregnant, they really need to take 3 months to investigate their genetic history, to look at their immunization history, to look at medications they're taking, to make a doctor's visit and take a look and make sure that they're healthy. Whatever medications they are taking, are they compatible with pregnancy? They need to start taking prenatal vitamins before they become pregnant, because those early weeks of pregnancy are so critical for the baby, and we need to make sure that she's well nourished. If she's obese, she needs to maybe think about losing some weight. If her diet isn't really good, she thinks about maybe having to beef up the diet a little bit better. This way, when she becomes pregnant, she doesn't say, oh my goodness, I'm taking Accutane. Now what should I do? She should really know
that. Happens, though.
It happens. Half of all pregnancies in the United States today are still unplanned pregnancies.
Right. Right.
So any woman of childbearing age really needs to treat herself as if she's pregnant all the time. Because contraception being what it is, it's not mm-hmm. fail-safe. So,
right.
So they really should plan beforehand. But once they become pregnant, the first thing they want to do is make an appointment with their healthcare provider, get the pregnancy confirmed, make sure all is well, make sure that they're caught up with their immunizations, that they're taking the right kind of vitamins, another review of the medications. Do we need to take you off some medications? Do we need to put you on other medications? All of those things. And we date the pregnancy. And we do prenatal testing to make sure that the pregnancy stays healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then their prenatal visits. Probably the number one thing, next to taking vitamins with folic acid, the number one thing she can do is to make her appointments for prenatal care. A lot of prenatal care is anticipation. Let's see what's going on with the pregnancy. So there are very simple things we do. We measure the pregnancy. We test her urine. We test her blood. We do a blood pressure. All of those things give us good information about, is the pregnancy progressing normally? And are there things we need to do to make sure that it continues to progress normally?
Right.
So a lot of it is what's called anticipatory care. I know what you see on TV is people running down the hall in an emergency situation. Certainly that happens, not as much as people would think. But it's because because we anticipate, we can anticipate those problems happening.
Right.
And put that care into place beforehand. So, so a lot of it is just anticipatory guidance.
I'm going to jump around a little bit
mm-hmm.
here. I know not so much when I volunteer on Friday,
mm-hmm.
but when I used to work part-time on Saturday and I'd come downstairs to the cafe to get a container of coffee or something,
mm-hmm.
I'd see they'd have like the room there, 2 and 3 there. On
Oh, the yeah, meeting room A and B.
Yeah, yeah, A and B, right. And they'd have, you know, the male and then the female would be sitting there
right.
and they'd be breathing. And
right.
What is all that?
Right.
We never went through that. I mean, I don't know anything about that.
Right.
It wasn't in existence 40 years ago.
Right. Know? Well, that's our weekend Lamaze class.
Okay.
And
want to explain what that is for those of us who don't know?
We actually have two different kinds of childbirth classes. They're birthing classes to educate the parents on what labor is like and what they can do to help themselves through labor. We have Lamaze classes, and then we have hypnobirth classes. They both teach about the birth process. So they tell the couple what they can expect during the labor. Lamaze class teaches to a wide variety of moms, who some of whom want medication, others of whom don't want medication or interventions during labor. So it along with teaching about birth, it teaches here's what I can do when there's a contraction. And that may mean anything from breathing patterns to relaxation to movement to music to water therapy to touch to aromatherapy, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. It teaches all about what can happen during the labor so that instead of going into labor not knowing what her body's trying to do and tensing against it, she says, okay, here's a contraction. Here's what I'm going to do with it. Hypnobirthing, on the other hand, is taken by women who really have a vision of not using any medications or interventions during labor. It teaches all about the birth process, but it uses hypnosis as its form of relaxation.
Okay.
So it's a little bit of a different take on that. But both classes give the couple the tools to use during labor, and they're not just a fun thing to do. I know that there's a reputation out there that Lamaze is the breathing, and that's a very small part of it. What childbirth classes do is they allow her to work with her body instead of against it. It's our natural impulse when we get into pain to tense up.
Right.
What that does in labor is it shoots out adrenaline into the woman's system, which shuts down labor because adrenaline is the fight or flight hormone. Right. She's either running for her life or she's fighting for her life. So I tell the moms in classes, if your body thinks it's running for its life from a saber-toothed tiger, so we're talking about cave people years and years ago, birth isn't a really good idea because she'll be eaten. So the women actually have the power to positively affect their labor by educating themselves. Because if they don't get educated, they're naturally going to tense up. They're going to work against their body. Translated, that's going to hurt more. It's going to take longer. And it's going to cause more complications.
And I got to ask, how did this all come about? Because when you stop and think, like when my four kids were born, the biggest thing was, oh, you can go into the room.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That was a big thing, wasn't it?
That was a big thing, which I didn't want to do. And they grabbed me and put clothes on me and put me in.
Right.
But how did this all come about? I mean, obviously through experiments and so on.
Right. Well, Lamaze has been around since the 1950s. Okay. It wasn't as well known. In the past, in hundreds of years ago, childbirth was a woman's event. Doctors were not called in. Midwives were called in.
Right.
And women were surrounded by women. And there wasn't the media that's out today having negative influences on the mothers. It's become that you can't labor without help.
Mm-hmm.
Where a woman's body knows how to do this, it certainly needs, you know, the assistance of other people, and we save lives by doctors and midwives helping moms. But there's a lot of negative influences out there today, and it's sort of given the women the idea that their bodies don't know how to do this without a whole lot of technology. So technology is really good. It saves lives. But women's bodies have known how to do this for millions of years.
Right.
So the education piece came in to give the woman the tools to use during the labor that'll help her labor to move along more faster.
I know our third child, happens to be our daughter, our only daughter. We lived in Neshanic Station at the time on top of Zion Mountain there and everything.
Okay.
And they said they induced labor for my wife because she felt that they felt that if she went into labor, it'd be too long of a drive to Somerset Medical Center to, you know, so they brought her in and induced labor.
Uh-huh.
Do they, I assume they still do that in occasions, but maybe not as often?
Well, they do induce labor. There should be a medical reason to induce labor. There's medical reasons, and then there's elective reasons. medical reasons might be. She lives too far from the hospital and her last labor was fast. It could be that her blood pressure has risen. It could be that she's got uncontrolled diabetes. It could be that she's post-dates. But there should be a reason why it's done. Elective reasons like I'm tired of being pregnant is not a good reason.
It's not a good, not a good choice.
Although that's been done plenty in the past. The thing about induction of labor is it's not like flipping a light switch. You're trying to make the body do what it's not quite ready to do yet. When you induce labor, you increase her chances of a cesarean birth. And that's a major abdominal surgery. Nowadays, we try not to do inductions unless there's a medical reason why that should be done. So they're not so much done electively anymore. The other thing that's fairly new, too, is the concept of a near-term baby or a late preterm baby. We used to think that 37 weeks was term. 37 weeks is not term. 39 weeks is term. The 36 to 38 week or 35 to 38 week baby is what we call late preterm. Or near term. Those babies aren't ready to be born either. They often can't breathe very well. They often can't they don't have the suck, swallow, breathe reflex, which we use every time we drink a glass of water and we don't choke. Their brains aren't developed as well as that term baby is. They just need to have a stay in the special care nursery, which kind of gets parenting off to a rough start. So we used to think, induce at 37 weeks, she's tired of being pregnant, no problem.
Induce with my son, my last child, my son, but my wife gave birth early.
Right.
And
sometimes that happens. Yeah.
It just happened.
Right.
And he had to stay in the hospital at least, I think it was at least 2 weeks.
Okay.
Afterwards. And, the first week was like in, what do you call it, almost like intensive care.
Right. And how many weeks gestation was he? Do you remember?
I don't remember. Okay. I know he was early. I know that. He was like 3+ pounds and,
Wow. He was really little.
Tiny, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Right. Yeah, those are the real little preterm babies. The thing about the 36 to 38 week baby, they could look like their normal size. They could be 6 to 8 pounds. But inside, they don't have the maturity that 39 to 40-week baby does. So we try not to induce labor unless there's a medical reason.
Right.
If the environment inside the uterus is becoming hostile, it's better that the baby is born. But if the environment inside mom is better, that's the best environment for the baby to grow.
Right.
So it's an interesting point, and you'll remember this, Larry, when JFK's son Patrick went to the special care nursery, and he subsequently passed away.
Right.
He was 34 weeks gestation. We hardly blink at 34 weeks now, but years ago we didn't have intensive care units.
Right.
So 34-week baby definitely is that late preterm baby, but they go home successfully nowadays.
Right.
So those years, and I guess that probably was 1961 or so that she lost that baby.
Right.
It's just amazing to me when I found out that he was 34 weeks.
In fact, I just finished 2 days ago reading a book by Bill O'Reilly, Killing JFK.
Oh, okay.
And it, went through the whole thing and, and he just a month or two before he got assassinated, Jackie lost another child, a girl.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there was the Carolyn and John Jr. that survived, but there was the
Patrick,
and then the baby. There was a baby girl afterwards.
I didn't know that. How awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've come a long way in helping our newborns. But prematurity is still a huge issue in the United States and worldwide, where babies are born preterm. And there's risk factors that we know about.
Right.
But a lot of babies are born preterm, and we don't even know why.
Now, you've talked about the two classes, Lamaze and hypnobirthing.
Hypnobirthing.
I'll get it. is there other classes that you have?
Yeah, we do. We've got breastfeeding classes, which teach the basics of breastfeeding. The moms who take the class actually do better with their babies because they understand when the lactation consultant comes in, they understand what we mean by the terminology that we're using and how important positioning and latch and so
right,
far is.
Right.
Dads are welcome to come to that class as well, because our position is who's with her at 3 o'clock in the morning if this is not going well. The more he knows, the better position, you know, he or she is in to keep, you know, keep her on the right track. And then we have our baby care class. And that's a 3-hour class. We talk about the nuts and bolts, you know, changing diapers and picking up a baby and holding them and burping them. That's actually pretty easy if you remember taking care of a baby. Within 3 days, you're getting that diaper on wrong, right? And if you get it wrong, you'll get it right the next time because things fly out.
You know, the funny thing is, too, I forget, I was reading something, Reader's Digest or something, and it was saying about how the diapers now is, you know, like Pampers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And back then, when our kids were little, you didn't have Pampers.
We had the pins,
You had the pins, and and me, you know, you didn't want to stick the kid, you know.
Right. So you learned really fast how to do it.
Well, yeah, you had to, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're always washing diapers, and, you know, so it was like, you know, it's a, like a different world, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of modern conveniences now.
Right.
But the nuts and bolts of parenting, the how to pick up, how to burp, how to feed and everything, that's fairly simple. So what our class also goes into is infant personality and temperament and a system of infant cues, which are infant's body language.
Right.
So babies are not, they're not buzzing masses of confusion. You can read what a baby's trying to tell you if you know what to look for. So we talk about hunger cues and sleep cues and fullness cues that the baby's saying, I've had enough to eat. And then we talk about behavioral cues, disengagement and engagement cues, how to tell if your baby wants to shut down and needs a break, or how to tell that your baby wants to interact with you. And this way, if they can read their babies and see what they're trying to say, then they can more intuitively care for their babies. Rather than saying, well, it's time to do this and we're going to do this. And the baby's saying, excuse me, I don't want to do that now. And the mother's saying, well, yes, you will. So babies aren't blank slates. They have personalities and temperaments right from the beginning. We thought that they were blank slates years ago. We thought that they didn't, you know, they really didn't, there wasn't much in there.
Right.
And now we know they come very highly evolved, even though they're fairly immature. And if you know how to read the baby, then you can care for the baby more sensitively and meet the baby's needs in a more sensitive
manner.
And
it's not on a regimented time,
it shouldn't be.
Time schedule.
It shouldn't
you know?
Be.
Well, no, I mean,
yeah.
It used to be, but it's not supposed to be now.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, we didn't know much about babies.
Well,
years
that's
ago.
True. That's
so
true.
So Dr. Spock was the authority, and he said, feed your baby every 4 hours, put the baby down, close the door, don't feed the baby for 4 hours. And that was fairly easy. It wasn't the right thing to do, but it was what we had. Where now it's, oh, the baby's crying. Okay, well, did I just feed the baby? Does the baby need to burp? Does the baby need just my cuddling and love?
Right.
Spoiling doesn't happen for 6, 7, 8 months or so. And the more intuitively you meet your baby's needs for the first 6 months, the less they have to cry later on. It's sort of a paradox, you know, that the more you meet their needs early on, the more you teach them that the world is a nice place that they can trust.
Are fathers allowed to all these classes?
Absolutely, yeah. Any of the classes they're allowed in. We don't have any father-specific classes. We did try those a couple years ago, and they didn't. That was one of the programs that didn't really fly very well.
I wonder why.
I don't think we nurture our fathers as well as we ought to in the United States.
Well, that's possible.
Yeah, we certainly don't nurture our mothers as well as other countries do.
No.
But certainly we don't nurture our dads either. And they need more attention. So they can come to all the classes without problem.
Do you find that a lot of them do?
Most of them do.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even the breastfeeding
class. That's good, actually.
Yeah, they usually do. Yeah. Because they want to, you know, they need to learn how to help the mother, too. And if they're sitting in the corner while she's laboring, chewing their fingernails off because they're upset, they're not going to help her very much. So the better, the more educated we can make them, the better they can help their partner.
I know I wasn't much help to my wife. First of all, I didn't want to go in. That was number one. The nurses forced me to go in.
Okay.
You know, when you got all the hat and everything and the gown and shoes, things on and paper, things on your feet. And they sat me next to my wife and I'm holding her hand. And the only thing I can look at is across from her, there was these two tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading the name on it. This is like, you know, Joe Solar Tank, you know, license number, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, boy.
I couldn't look. It was just beyond me, you know. So the second child, I didn't want to go in at all.
Okay.
Right? I was trying to hide outside. You know, that didn't work. They come out
Darn
and got
it.
Me again, you know. But it's just, you know, I was there for all four of them, but, it, you know,
well,
one time they...
What am I going to see? You don't know what you're going to see.
Well, one time the doctor says to me, "Are you all right?" I go, "No, not really." He's smelling sauce under my nose because I'm about ready to collapse.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So what the classes do is they sort of desensitize both parents. Here's what you're going to see. Here's what it looks like. Here's a tour. Here's what's going to happen. So when they go in, they're not quite as freaked out because they know what they can do to help their partner.
And here's a guy that spent 4 years in the military, overseas in Vietnam.
Saw all kinds
saw
of things,
just
right?
all sorts of things and can't watch his wife
right,
give birth.
Right,
you know, he's going to faint, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like, whoa, really?
You know? But it's an unknown. You didn't know what you were in for.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but this teaches you what you're in for.
And I think it's great. You know, I really do, because if we would have had that back then, maybe I wouldn't have needed smelling salts,
right.
you know.
Maybe
whatever,
not.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But... It's just, we've come a long way.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, we definitely have.
And in a lot of areas, not just, you know, this, but.
Oh, sure.
You know,
yeah.
But it's just, I think it's amazing because this is just a dumb question maybe, but is it still, like, you know, you see on television back years ago and the woman screaming and, you know, is it still that painful?
Well, labor's labor. You know, the contractions will come whether the mother's ready to handle them or not. Labor pain is different than any other pain, and I don't mean it's the worst pain. It's different. The thing that makes pain so frightening to us under normal circumstances is we don't know how bad it's going to get. We don't know how long it's going to last. We don't know what's wrong, and we don't know what to do about it. Well, that's what the classes teach. It's a predictable pain. You have a contraction for 60 to 90 seconds. It will be over after that. You will be pain-free in between that. It's true that pain-free period gets shorter and shorter. But we tell the moms, you can do anything for 60 seconds. If you know that that pain is going to last for 60 seconds, you can do anything. And I often ask a mother, you know, what was the worst pain you've ever had in your life? Well, some of them have broken limbs. Some of them have had awful injuries. Maybe a kidney stone, maybe a gallbladder attack. And I say to them, now, if you knew that that pain was going to last a minute, could you do it? Well, yeah, of course I could, because I only know it's going to last for a minute. Well, that's how labor is. It's going to last for 30 to 90 seconds, and then it's going to be over with. And each one gets you closer to the goal. So what the childbirth classes teach is here's what it's going to be like. Here's what you can do to help yourself so we don't need to scream. Screaming is counterproductive. It tenses muscles. It makes it hurt more. So certainly while women will do that, the hope is that they can breathe through the contraction, relax through the contraction to get through that, which makes it productive. But here's what they need to do. And I know that there's a sort of a popular opinion out there that friends tell friends, oh, don't take Lamaze because it doesn't work. Well, nothing will work if you don't take it seriously.
Right.
If you only go to class and you do nothing to practice, I can promise you it will not work because you're not well rehearsed. But if you go to class and you take it seriously and you do what the instructor tells you to do, it will work because you will have rehearsed it over and over again. I tell people it's like learning how to swim. You got to get in the water. If you don't practice, you're certainly not going to be able to do it.
That's right.
So you know, the opinion of friends saying don't take it because it goes out the window, well, if you don't take it seriously, it does go out the window.
Right.
Really, it does.
You know, I say to people often that if men had to give birth, we wouldn't have a population problem.
Probably.
You know, I know we wouldn't. You know.
But really, you know, labor is it's a challenging experience. It's hard work.
Right.
It's called labor for a reason.
For a reason, right.
It's hard work. the interesting thing about when you talk to women afterwards, and here's the evidence, when we do studies about labor satisfaction, satisfaction with the experience, the most satisfied women are those who have the are given autonomy during labor, given the power to make decisions during labor, and meet the challenge of labor and greet it with strength. The amount of pain that a woman has is not related to the amount of satisfaction she has during labor. So she could have had an awful, excruciating, long labor, but if she was given autonomy and felt like, I did it, I worked with my body, I did it, that's what causes labor satisfaction.
Right.
Not the amount of pain she has. You'd think it would be.
You know, would
it was
think,
pain-free
yeah.
labor.
Right.
It was lovely.
Right.
But it's the autonomy and the mastery and given the decision, the power to make decisions over her body
that's
and her baby. That's what causes labor satisfaction.
That's very interesting.
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, definitely a challenge. And, you know, definitely, you know, lots of women use pain medications, and that's fine. You know, they certainly have a place during labor as well. So, you know, to each his own. What we try to do
is teach pain medication during
Absolutely,
labor?
Absolutely, you can.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's pain medications that we can use. Anything that we use can impact the labor or impact the baby. So, you know, we have to be careful in what we use.
Right.
But the placenta.
And they have to know that, too.
They have to know that. And that's what we teach during class.
Right.
Is that anything we do has the power to impact the labor or the baby. So we give them those facts and let them make that choice. And they make that choice.
Okay.
It's all about giving them the tools that they can take to their healthcare provider and say, I learned about this in class. Could we talk about this? And it gives them, it helps them to advocate for themselves.
Okay.
You know, I always tell them, you know, when you go into a car dealership, you kick the tires, you look under the hood, you're not afraid to ask that salesman questions. When you're having a baby, don't be afraid to ask questions. Here's the questions you might ask. Because it should be a partnership between her and her healthcare provider.
Sure.
And we give them we give them the information to take to their healthcare provider. And it's always take it back to your doctor, ask your doctor or midwife these questions. And it makes them informed consumers.
Sure.
That's important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Are there things that people don't always think of that they should before the baby's born?
There's... I think any first-time parent can't possibly know how much energy a new baby takes.
Oh, yeah.
Right. you know, we try to tell them, but until you're there, it's really hard for them to understand. And what a life change this is. Even if they've planned the pregnancy, they're joyful about it, everything is fine, it is a new normal. And they become parents in an instant. But they become parents, it takes much longer than that. So you become a mother, you become a father, but in order to really be confident in your parenting skills, that takes months. It's a process. It's not just the next day. And it's a process that unfolds. So
it's a process that goes on for years.
It goes on for years. It truly does. And I think a parent has arrived when they can stand in ShopRite and their kid is throwing a hissy fit on the floor and they can say, come get me when you're done. I'm going to walk 10 feet down. And they don't care what other parents think of them. They've arrived as parents.
Yep. That's true.
And that takes time.
Yes, it does.
And you can't make that unfold any faster than it does. So the second time parent will drop a pacifier and brush it along their jeans and stick it in the kid's mouth. The first timer will go and boil that pacifier.
Right.
But she'll get to the point where she'll brush it on her jeans and put it in the kid's mouth. But that it takes time. You can't rush that. So any family member who's been a parent shouldn't ridicule that parent who's in the sterilize, boil everything phase. They were there once too.
Right.
It just hindsight is always 20/20.
Sure.
And it takes time to get there, and they need to give it time.
And you know, I think that a lot of times, you know, if my wife had a question, she'd ask her mother, you know, or you know, try to find an answer through you know her healthcare physician or whatever.
Right.
But we were fortunate that her parents and my mother didn't, oh, you should do this. Oh, you should do that.
Yeah.
You know, oh, why aren't you doing this or that? Mm-hmm. They kept quiet.
Good.
And
nice.
Yeah, we made mistakes, obviously. Sure we did.
Uh-huh.
But it was our mistakes to make so we could learn from them.
Right, you know? Right.
And after we did it, well, that, we should have done it the other way or
right.
whatever, you know.
Right.
And you learned. It wasn't that you were putting the child in danger or anything.
Right.
But it was like some simple thing. But
right.
so many times you hear of parents or family members or sisters or brothers or whatever. Oh, why don't you do, we did this and why mm-hmm. you should.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you may have done it. It may have worked for you.
Right.
But it may not work for me.
That's right.
You know.
That's right.
You know, I tell people, because I'm involved with support groups and so on and so forth mm-hmm. for mentally ill family, people mm-hmm. that have mentally ill relatives in their family. And I'll say, you know, just because a medication worked for X
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean it's going to work for
right.
your son or daughter.
Right.
Everybody's body's different. Everybody mm-hmm. absorbs things differently.
Mm-hmm.
What may work for me may not work for you. It
right.
may, but you don't know.
Right.
It may not.
Right.
You know,
right.
and a lot of times mm-hmm. it takes 4 or 6 weeks for the body to adjust and,
right.
you know, adhere to the medication.
Right.
And sometimes it doesn't adhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to look at
toss it
plan
out.
B.
Right.
You know?
Well, I tell new parents that there's a million parenting books because there's a million ways to do it. If
right.
there was one right way to do it, then there'd be one book and we'd all
right.
do it the same way. But they're going to make mistakes.
Sure.
I boil it down to 3 simple rules. Feed the baby, change the baby, and don't drop the baby.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not rocket science.
No.
You know, if you get the diaper on wrong, you'll get it on right the next time.
Right.
You're not going to hurt the baby and love the baby most of all. But it takes time to find their style. And for grandparents, and I am a grandparent, and so I know you have to keep your mouth closed with a lot of things and trust that you've raised your children well enough that they can become parents. But
right.
it's our job to support them, not to tell them what to do.
Right.
They wouldn't appreciate that. We didn't appreciate that when we became parents
sure.
either.
Sure, absolutely.
So.
Would you give any advice to new parents about their childbirth classes? Besides, take them.
Well, plan early because we take the classes a little bit later in the pregnancy. But oftentimes, I have people calling me in the last couple of weeks of pregnancy, and they want classes, and it's usually far too late. It usually doesn't work out with their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
The ideal is that they finish classes about 3 to 4 weeks before their due date. So, and you know, they can take advantage of any and all of the classes you know that they want. And but remember, take them seriously. You know, take them to heart. Don't
right.
just go to class and then expect them to work. They're not magic.
Right.
You have to work it in order to make it really work for you. And that's what I would tell people. And develop a vision for your birth. You know, learn all about birth. Don't watch Maternity Center. Don't watch Baby Story.
Right.
Don't listen to friends' opinions unless they're good birth stories. Don't listen to bad birth stories because thoughts create reality.
Sure.
And you want to make your thoughts positive ones. I think probably the best message is their bodies know how to be pregnant. They know how to birth. They know how to birth. They need to get their heads out of the way and let their bodies do the work.
You had said earlier about looking into various things before the woman became pregnant.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens if, oops,
you know,
she becomes pregnant,
yeah.
okay, and didn't have time to look into it prior to that.
Right.
What happens then?
Well, it causes a lot of worry and concern during the pregnancy as she wonders, you know, should I have not taken that medication? Should I have not had that drink? Should I have been taking vitamins all along? And it may put the pregnancy at risk as well. I mean, suppose she's a teacher and she's not immune to German measles, which is rubella, which
okay.
is a mild disease with children, but it can be devastating to an unborn fetus. Well, now she's going to, and we can't immunize her during the pregnancy. It's a live vaccine. So now she's going to spend her whole pregnancy worried that some unimmunized child is going to expose her. So it's always good to plan ahead of time.
Right.
But still, many, many pregnancies are unplanned. So you get, you, go to the doctor and you get yourself off of the medications. We replace them with medications that you can take, and get you on vitamins as soon as you possibly can be, and try to correct it sort of after the fact. But, you know, the thing to remember is that the human body is tremendously resilient, and despite all that can go wrong, usually it goes right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the thing to remember is that while there can be high-risk pregnancies and certainly devastating things that happen, the miracle is that it usually does go right despite things. But that doesn't mean that she shouldn't get preconception care.
Yeah, so right.
She really should go for preconception.
But, you know, by the same token, people lose their child. Like we were talking about the Kennedys. Mm-hmm. My wife lost one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's devastating.
It is.
I mean, even if you have a couple kids prior,
it
you know,
doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. It's devastating.
It is devastating.
You know,
and we find out about pregnancy a lot earlier than we used to. You know, the woman used to have to skip a period
before
we found out. Now she finds out, and she's very early on in her pregnancy, and a lot of pregnancies do miscarry. Now, those women, you know, your wife and myself years ago, we wouldn't have even known that because we didn't even know we were pregnant yet. Now women learn about their pregnancies very, very early, where the pregnancy might miscarry very early on because there's something wrong with the fertilized egg.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make it any less devastating. It seems like it's happening more now. I don't think it is, but women know about it more.
Yeah.
So. You know, what we thought was sort of a heavy period was actually a miscarriage,
mm-hmm.
you know, but we didn't realize that. So,
right.
So there's benefits to technology, but still it makes women know that this happens. And it's devastating every time it happens.
Oh,
doesn't matter
I'm
when.
Sure it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be. I mean, I know how my wife felt and I know how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I was more in sympathy for her.
Yeah.
For the suffering she was going through at the time.
Right.
You know, and, you know, but I understand.
Yeah.
You know,
it's hard.
Totally.
It's hard.
It's very hard.
Right.
What about the maternity and newborn care center at the hospital? Can you explain a little bit about that?
Well, we have 19 private rooms. We use what's called an LDR concept, which is labor, delivery, recovery. So we've set aside, I want to say maybe 7 or 8 rooms for our laboring moms. They labor and deliver in that room. They spend the first couple of hours with their baby in that room, and then they move to the other side of the hallway after that. It's the same room. It's just what we've done is we've put all the labor rooms together, which makes for much better care and communication between the labor nurses. And then they move actually to the rooms that have the better view of the front of the hospital. I tell them they're getting a hotel upgrade.
Yeah, right. There you go.
And then they spend their whole postpartum stay there.
Okay.
We have 2 obstetrical operating rooms, so we do cesarean birth there. We have a special care nursery. We're a level 2 facility, so that means we can handle babies down to about 32 weeks of pregnancy. Any babies smaller than that, we have the capacity to stabilize those babies and get them ready for transport to a level 3 facility, which is a neonatal intensive care unit.
Which is where?
A neonatal intensive care unit. The closest one to here is St. Peter's University Hospital in New Brunswick or Morristown Memorial Hospital.
Okay.
So it's regionalized care. It's like regionalized trauma centers. Not every hospital is allowed to be a trauma center, nor do we have the population to bear it. So we're not licensed to be a NICU. Neither is Somerset. Neither is Princeton. Neither is Doylestown. They're all level 2 facilities. So we feed our patients into those level 3 facilities. And they're the bigger facilities, what's called the tertiary care facilities, like trauma centers and so forth.
Right.
We deliver about 900 deliveries babies a year.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not much.
It seems like a lot.
Not compared to the bigger facilities.
Yeah, but this is Hunterdon County. You know, it's not Trenton or Patterson.
I know.
Or, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
So it's a lot
so
of babies.
So it's a lot, you know.
It's a lot
in my way of thinking, it's a lot.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a lot. But, you know, we're well-staffed for it. All of the nurses they're passionate about what they do. It's an excellent staff of nurses. They love what they do, all of them. My staff is passionate about childbirth education and breastfeeding and So mm-hmm. it's a nice place to be. I think it's a nice place to have a baby.
Do you, you mentioned breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. Do you recommend that the mother or potential mother breastfeed or just bottle feed?
Well, formula has risks that breastfeeding doesn't. You know, breastfeeding, it's human milk for human babies. Formula mm-hmm. is not human milk. It's cow. It's usually right. cow's milk right. or it's soy protein. So the breastfed babies are healthier babies overall. Their mothers are actually healthier. So it's actually become a public health issue where if moms would breastfeed, their babies would be sick less. They would have to take less time off from work. So while it's a choice, definitely, and I certainly wouldn't want to steer a mother, if she's going to be miserable breastfeeding, she's better off feeding her baby formula. But there are distinct benefits to breastfeeding that formula doesn't have.
I'm not looking to publicize any formula, but is mm-hmm. there any formula that's, if a woman says, no, I can't because of XYZ or whatever, mm-hmm. I have to use a formula. Mm-hmm. Is there one that you recommend more than another?
No. Mm-mm.
Because they're all about the same?
Well, they're different. They may be made with cow's milk. They may be made with soy protein.
Okay.
They may be made with what's called hydrolyzed protein, which are broken down proteins.
Okay.
But generally, pediatricians will say start with a milk-based iron-fortified formula. They're a little bit different. In terms of exactly what they've got in them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What we do recommend is once you get a formula and you start on it, don't go switching formulas. Don't buy what's on
right.
sale because your baby's tummy knows the difference.
Right.
And rely on your pediatrician or your family doctor for advice on that. So.
Okay. After a baby's born, some parents may need support
mm-hmm.
or supportive help or whatever.
Sure.
Do you have classes or can people do that?
Yeah, absolutely. For one thing, if you're breastfeeding, we have outpatient visits and phone consults.
Okay.
The nice thing about being a community hospital is the maternity unit is sort of known for our continuing support. So parents are always given the phone number of the maternity unit.
Okay.
My phone number is 788-MOMS, so people call me years later and talk about problems and issues.
That's an interesting phone number.
Yeah, well, it's easy to remember. And then we have our support groups. They meet every week from 1 to 2:30, and the moms get together. And it's sort of like it takes a village. And they sit mm-hmm. and they can ask whatever questions they need to. And we talk about nothing is off limits, but it's very helpful for a mother to sit in a room with other mothers and know that they're going through the same thing that she's going through in her journey to become, you know, a confident mother.
Sure,
and they
because
develop their own.
I see that in support groups.
Right.
People
right.
come to support group and mm-hmm. there's other people there who may have gone through what they're
right.
going through, or are going through the same thing at mm-hmm. the same time, or you know, and it's helpful because
yeah.
you know people. Suggest certain things and
right.
you know help them get through it
right
you know?
and that's
the same thing it's
yeah,
just
there's
you
just
know.
this community that you develop
right.
with that
right.
that's so valuable. And one of the nicest things is at Christmas I get Christmas cards from the moms, and they send pictures, and I'm like, who are all these children? Because when I knew them, they only each had one. And now there's five mothers and
yeah.
there's 12 children, and
yeah, right.
and they formed this support group
right.
on their own.
Sure.
And it sort of spun off of my Baby Steps program.
Right.
And how great
That's
is
awesome.
That?
That's
you know?
Awesome.
And then we have a breastfeeding support group as well. We have infant
okay.
massage classes afterwards. So
okay.
we've got a lot afterwards, and it's very nice that we've got all of that for the mothers. So
and if somebody wanted to get more information or about reach you about the programs
mm-hmm.
Is besides that
788-MOMS yeah
that's 908-788-MOMS
yep. mm-hmm.
Is there a website they can go on and check out? Or
well, they can go on 100inhealthcare.org
okay
and just click on the home page. If you click on mothers women and children and then click on having a baby
okay.
there's all kinds of stuff on there, and it's
okay.
got my phone number on there, so they can certainly give me a call.
Okay.
So
I can't tell you, it's been very interesting. You know?
Good.
it's just, you know, I think it's wonderful that there's so much available that wasn't available years ago.
It's a nice support.
You know, it is. Yeah. It is awesome, I think.
Yeah, you know, we don't have extended families in America like we did years ago. So oftentimes an expecting couple is not living anywhere near a supportive family.
Right. They could
so
be out in sort of the you family. Know, their family could be in California mm-hmm. or Louisiana or whatever.
Right.
Jean, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
And I really enjoyed it. And I know that the listeners got a boatload of information.
They sure did.
and if you want to reach it, it's 908-788-MOMS.
That's right.
And we're not going to be on the radio next week because the next week is Labor Day and they will do rewinds. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So we'll see you in 2 weeks. Enjoy Labor Day and have a safe one.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Headline News. I'm Kelly Sloan. Officials say the Cypress, Texas police officer shot Friday night at a gas station was hit 15 times. Suspect Shannon Miles appeared in district court today and is being held without bond. It is not known why Deputy Darren Goforth was killed.
We have not been able to extract any details regarding a motive at this point. As far as we know, Deputy Goforth had no previous contact with the suspect. And it appears at the outset to be clearly unprovoked.
That was Harris County Sheriff Ron Hickman. Officials say a 19-year-old gunned down his mother, stepfather, and grandmother in his home in eastern Tennessee Saturday near Bristol. Six children witnessed the attack. The gunman, Robert Denton, was chased down by his grandfather, who shot him in the arm. Denton has been charged with first-degree murder. This is USA Headline News.
Wish summer would last forever? Ask Sherwin-Williams and save 30% on paints and stains during the Endless Summer Sale, August 27th through September 7th. With colors like Picnic, August Moon, and Pressed Flower, you'll be surrounded by summer long after the leaves have changed. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store and save 30% today. Find your nearest store at sherwinwilliams.com/sale. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
All set. How was your visit with the dentist?
Painful.
Shall we book another appointment then?
No,
wonderful. I'll sign you up for our root canal rewards. 10th one's free.
10th one?
You're drooling on my papers.
That's lovely.
How about a rewards program you can actually use every day?
You're listening to HunterdonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
ISIS killed a local resident for killing an ISIS member. This is USA Headline News.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell and New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady are in court today over the Deflategate case. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Don't settle! Settle, Tom. You look beautiful. Tom Brady was cheered as he walked into the Manhattan courthouse, while Roger Goodell was jeered. Judge Richard Berman had ordered both to show up for a final conference before he rules on whether Brady must serve a four-game suspension for his role in using underinflated footballs during a playoff game last season. The NFL wants the judge to agree it handled the case appropriately, while the NFL Players Association wants the suspension nullified. Judge Berman has said he hopes to rule by Friday. Julie Walker, New York.
A judge has ejected a white supremacist from a Kansas courtroom after the man objected to jury instructions in his own murder trial. Frazier Miller told the judge that he doesn't respect the process. He is acting as his own attorney. Miller admitted he fatally shot three.
This is USA Headline News. I'm Melody Burkett. South Carolina's governor says the death toll from the massive flooding in her state is now at 9.
Everybody has been very good. The traffic is light.